Speak, O Lord, your servants heareth. Amen. Please be seated. Several times in these lessons, the word darkness appears. Now, I know that we're modern people and that we're not superstitious, and we're also very sophisticated, and we know that it's not good to dwell on some things. That we want to look on the bright side of life, as the Gospel according to Brian tells us. We don't want to be taken by darkness. It's darkness that appears in this text, in these texts over and over again. Darkness. In the beginning, all was dark. And God said, let there be light. But the darkness continues. And now it's not just the kind of the darkness of the sun going down in the evening, or the darkness when the lights get shut off in a building. It's a deeper kind of darkness that we can't really fathom, but it is always there. And so every year we light a candle. We come here and we light the candle, and we light all four of them in the Christ candle, because this is our way, a symbolic way, maybe a naive and innocent way of saying, no matter how dark it is, even one small candle beats back the darkness to a point. Because where this candle is, there can't be darkness, right? Where this candle is, there is light. We yearn and long for light against the darkness. Our lessons today are scary. You can tell that the people that gave up these lessons, that wrote down these texts, they were scared. They were looking for light, but they didn't know it. In the Old Testament lesson, as well as the Gospel lesson, there is a deep sense of foreboding and a deep sorrow over great loss. In the Gospel lesson, we hardly know what to make of it. This is Mark. We went through the book of Matthew all last year. Now we're going through the book of Mark. Now, Mark is an interesting gospel. It's quite different from many of the others because almost all scholars, believe that Mark is the earliest gospel written. It's the one that is closest to the events of Jesus and his disciples. It's written sometime around 60 to 70 A.D. That's 30 years after Jesus was here. And so there's a kind of roughness and immediacy about the Gospel of Mark. And this text from the 13th chapter, no one knows what to make of it. It seems to be talking about Jesus coming back again a second time, but other places it doesn't seem to. One thing is clear, is they have suffered. The people out of whom this text came have suffered greatly. What has happened? The Jews, how do I say this? The Jews cannot, in their bones, worship false gods. The Jews will go to their death before they will worship a Roman god. Now, when I say the Jews, I'm talking about all the Jews in Palestine, and Jews really around the Fertile Crescent, around the Mediterranean. And some of these Jews are followers of Jesus. But all of them, at least all of them who have been in Jerusalem, have gone through 4 or 5 years of bloodshed, of siege, of loss, and death. The group called the Zealots. Have you heard of the Zealots before? It's one of the many different groups within Israel, at the time of Jesus. Many different organizations were organizing to try to drive out the Romans. And the fiercest group of all were the Zealots. And their job was to drive the Romans out largely by assassination. They would hide in the shadows, and as a Roman soldier or a Roman official would walk by, they would leap out and stab that person or persons to death. Well, things got so bad in Jerusalem that Rome finally started to pay attention. And Caesar said, this has to stop, and here's how we're going to make it stop. I'm going to send Titus. Titus is a great Roman general, victorious in all of his conquests. I'm going to send Titus to Jerusalem and say, enough is enough. And so Titus does come, mounts a siege. All the dogs and cats are eaten. They turn to mice and rats, and there's nothing left. They will not bow the knee to Rome. But there's something else going on. Just this last year, a discovery was made by archaeologists that the Zealots, in their zeal to defeat the Romans, hid, I think I may have mentioned this to you last year, they actually hid stores of food. They prevented their own people from getting food. Why did they do that? Because it would make them fight harder, was the Zealot theory. If there's no food, they will fight harder to defeat the Romans so they can get food. This is darkness. Tens of thousands of people were killed. And it's out of this experience that this wild gospel lesson comes. And if it's too wild, you can always look at the first lesson. First lesson's even worse. It's darkness that just overcomes the people. They have lost everything. They once were a proud nation. They were a proud people. They were called the Israelites. And over a series of generations and two great empires, first the Assyrian and then the Babylonian empires, they came in and they virtually wiped everything out and killed thousands upon thousands of Israelites. Darkness was everywhere. And people cry out. This is what they said. This is Isaiah, and Isaiah is a prophet. Isaiah speaks for God to the people, but sometimes Isaiah speaks from the people to God. Oh, that you would tear open the heavens and come down, so that the mountains would quake at your presence, as when fire kindles brushwood and fire causes water to boil, to make your name known to your adversaries, so that the nations may tremble at your presence. Tear open the heavens. Tear them open. Come down. We want vengeance. We want protection. We want our lands and our homes back. We want the restoration of our people. And how is that to be done? It's to be done by grabbing God by the throat and yanking him down and pulling him into the world. Rend the heavens, they say. Tear open the heavens, God, and come down. Punch a hole in the sky and come down. What do you do, though? What do you do if, after all of this calling upon God, you have the feeling that God's not listening? You have the feeling that God's not there. You have the feeling that God doesn't care about you. Because that was the feeling that was being expressed here in this Old Testament lesson, and also in our psalm. The sense that God may be somewhere, but God's certainly not here, because we call upon him and we get no answer. Where is God? The expectation is that God is where power is. The expectation is God is in the heavens and he can marshal an army of angels on the millions and destroy everybody if need be. Instead, what does God do? He leaves us here in the midst of our suffering, and we cry out to God and we get no response. Darkness wins. It's darkness which is everywhere. And even in the heart of the people who are crying for God, darkness has taken over. What do you do when it seems that God is absent? Maybe, I'm sure you've had the feeling, I certainly have, more than once, had the feeling that I could call out to God till I was blue in the face and never get a response. I know that feeling. What's going on in these texts, though? What's going on is simply this. The people who are calling upon God's name in this way are looking for God in all the wrong places. God is not, how many times does it have to be shown, God is not sitting up on the mountaintop like Zeus on Olympus, hurling down thunderbolts. That is not God. That's Greek religion, but it certainly isn't God. How many times do we have to be reminded that God doesn't punch a hole in the sky? God doesn't rip the skies open and come down with all of his avenging armies of angels. So where is God? God is the light in our darkness. But we need more than that. Christians believe that Jesus Christ is the full expression of God. That if you want to know what God is like, you don't have to speculate. You don't have to meditate or contemplate. You just have to look at Jesus. What is God like? Look at Jesus Christ. That's what God is like. And when we look at Jesus Christ, what do we see? Do we see a majestic power that comes on hosts of angels to defeat the enemies of his own people? That's what they think. That's what they're expecting. And that's why they can't hear God, because they're looking for God in the wrong place. They're expecting God to come down from Mount Olympus with all of his angels. And it doesn't happen. And so the expectation is shattered that God is even in our midst. There's a terrible story that highlights this, and I think I may have told the story before. It's a story out of the book called Night by Elie Wiesel. Elie Wiesel is a Nobel Prize-winning author. The book Night tells the story, a number of stories, about his mother and father, about his sister, and about himself. They are living in Romania as Jews when they are rounded up and sent to Auschwitz, the concentration camp. And I was going to read you from Night, but it's too hard. It's too hard to hear, so I won't. All I'll say is that in the concentration camps in Auschwitz, there were thousands of people, and somebody committed some minor infraction, and the commandant of the camp said, "We're going to teach you a lesson, just like Titus, the general, just like the Roman emperor. We're going to teach them, these Jews, a lesson." So they called everybody out, made them stand in lines. And they selected a little boy, and they hanged him. It took him a long time to die because he was very light. And he finally did. And Wiesel says, "I heard a voice behind me, a man who had cried out before, 'Where is God? Where is God?'" This is a faithful prayer of a devout Jew. doubting that God even exists. And Wiesel says, "And I heard from within me a voice rising and crying out, 'There he is. There on the gallows is God.'" Darkness is everywhere. We live in a time when to even raise the issue of darkness is to kind of commit a cultural sin. So much of our time and our energy and our wealth is given over to buying things for Christmas. And that's fine, that's good. We don't even have an economic theory that tells us, that shows us how we can live without constantly spending more money. We don't. When George Bush said after 9/11, said to everybody, "Go shopping," he wasn't being cynical. He was saying, "Go shopping because this economy will collapse if you don't." We don't even have a theory for understanding what it's like to live in a way that doesn't depend upon the darkness. It used to be we waited till after Thanksgiving to start the Christmas shopping, but now this year, or maybe last year I didn't notice it, but certainly this year I did notice it. It was Halloween. It was Halloween. And the lights were already going up and the carols were being sung in the store. And if you dare come in and say the word darkness, there is darkness. Well, just expect to get thrown out. But in this place, in this church, and churches like it all around the world, we are on this day, the first Sunday of Advent, saying that no matter how dark it is, and it is dark, and there are things coming now in certain parts of the world that are going to be very, very bad. In the face of that, we still have this candle. In the face of that, we have God who appears in Jesus Christ. In the face of that, we have Jesus Christ in our midst. If you were to ask me, where is God? I would start by saying he's in Jesus Christ and therefore in the people of St. Paul's. When I come here and I share with you, I feel the presence of God. And no matter what darkness there could possibly be, you are a light, the light in the world. Amen.